Reading this evening, Canto 2, Chapter 3, Text 11. So if you were Srila Vyasadeva, and you just composed this very wonderful, famous verse, Akama Sarva Kama Va Moksha Kama Udharati, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusham Param. What would you do for a follow-up? Another very nice verse. It's going to be a summary verse. So the first 10 verses of the chapter have described Shukadeva Goswami saying, now I've answered your question. What's the duty of the person who's about to die? So he's invoking the whole message of the first two chapters, the hearing and chanting, and dedicating everything to the personality of Godhead in pure devotion. Then he backs up and says, supposing one still has material desires and following that instruction. So there's the demigod worship option, but really one should just worship the personality of Godhead if one has understood what the purpose of life is. And then one who has understood the purpose of life, even with material desires, with a desire for liberation or no desires, tivra bhakti should be done. That's the summary. Now, all the different kinds of worshippers of demigods, multi-demigods, can attain the highest perfectional benediction, which is spontaneous attraction unflinchingly fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead only by the association of the pure devotee of the Lord. So it's such a nice... If one has material desires, there's means to achieve by the ritual section of the Vedas. But the pure devotional service, that's the message that we heard chapter 2. So now we're hearing it again, pure devotional service. So how do you get from the having material desires and then hearing what the goal of life is and being able to execute on it, even to hear about it? It requires association of pure devotees of the Lord. Etavan eja yajatam iha nikshaya sodayaha bhagavati achalo bhavo yad bhagavata sangataha bhagavata sangataha. From the first canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 2, those of you that are thoroughly realized in first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, at least well studied, at least you've heard it a lot. What's the verse from chapter 2 that resembles this verse? There are two types of Bhagavatas, the book Bhagavata and the person Bhagavata, and great service is done by rendering service to both of them. Any bells ringing?
Nityam
Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloki Bhaktir Bhavati Naisuki. There we go. That's the verse, right? Devotional service to the personality of Godhead arises from the heart when one renders service unto the person and the book Bhagavat, because the person Bhagavat is going to speak with the book Bhagavat. So hearing from that person Bhagavat and rendering service to that person Bhagavat, then one can move from this infested with material desires stage and chasing after them to the Bhagavat Bhakti by Bhagavata Sangataha. Bhagavati Achalo Bhavo. Where there's un-achalo, chala and achala. So unflinching devotion to the personality of Godhead with spontaneous attraction. This becomes possible through the association of a pure devotee of the Lord. So this pure devotion becomes possible through the association of one who has pure devotion. Etavan eva yajatam. Yajatam. Yaja means worship. It's been speaking about worship. Worship this one, worship that one. Worship the, Prabhupada says, the multi-demigods. So that's the, indicated by the pronoun, etavan. Eva yajatam. The multi-demigod worshippers can get to the Nikshaya Sodayaha. Nikshaya Sodayaha means the highest benediction. Internally they can receive and develop the highest benediction, Nikshaya Sodayaha. A little appreciation, if you indulge me for a moment, in the poetry of the Bhagavatam. Because the same etavam eva yajatam iha nikshaya sodayaha phrase appears in several places. Not exactly, but very, very similar, as poetry may not be identical, but similar. Etavam eva lokesmin punksam nikshaya sodayaha tivrena bhakti yogena. Wow. Third chapter, text 25. This is Kapila Dev teaching to Devahuti. Mano mayarpitam stiram. One can become etavan eva lokesmin, amongst all persons who are in the material creation. Pungsang Nikshaya Sodaya, the person who gets this Nikshaya Sodaya, the greatest benediction, Tivra Bhakti. Same as the previous verse, text 10, this is text 11 from chapter 3, same message from Kapila Dev. Those whose minds are fixed on the Lord, Mano, Mayarpitam, arpita, similar to worship, it's similar to yaja, is arpitam, yajatam, arpitam. They worship Krishna by their minds being completely fixed upon him. That is what Krishna indicates, manmana, mind fixed upon me. Fixed upon Krishna because of relationship with Krishna, a loving relationship with Krishna. By intensive devotional service, tivra bhakti, that is the only means for attainment of the final perfection of life. What's back to the question from chapter 19, canto 1. What is the the duty, the ultimate duty of people in general and when about to die. Tivra bhakti. Don't wait till you're just about to die and then I'll then do tivra bhakti. By the cultivation of that disposition, then it becomes possible. And tivra bhakti means this unmixed devotion. Just like this verse that we just read, Bhagavati Achalo, Chala and Achala, flickering and absolute devotion, unflinching devotion, Ahaitaki Bhakti, another phrase from First Canto, Chapter 2. So that's from the third canto, chapter 25, Kapila Dev's teachings. Now guess what? The same phrase appears again in the sixth canto. There's symmetry to the poetry of the Bhagavatam, but then slight variation. Eta vaneva lokesmin pungsam dharma para smritaha. Instead of saying dikshaya sodayaha, it's dharma para. Same idea. The message of the Bhagavatam is paradharma, the topmost, the supreme occupation for the living being. Bhakti yoga, Bhagavati, tan, nama, grahanadibhi, which means devotional service, beginning with chanting of the holy name of the Lord, is the religious principle for living entities in human society. It's the answer to the same question, or it's the same answer. Devotional service in this case is beginning with the holy name. Tan nama grahanadabhi. Why the holy name? Because that's Canto 6. The beginning chapters is the Ajamila story. Devotional service beginning with the holy name. Because Ajamila called Narayan. And by calling the name of Narayan, even Abbas, even unintentionally, he got enormous spiritual benefit. So that's the paradharma, devotional service. And that's if the word nikshaya sodaya is not used, because the ultimate benefit is to come to love of God, and the inadvertent chanting of Ajamila wasn't, that's not the nikshaya sodaya, the ultimate benefit. It's liberation. We're completely released from the clutches of one's sinful reactions and the modes of nature, and extremely benefited. Then again in the seventh canto, the Bhagavatam repeats, Etavan eva lokesmin pungsa svarta paraha smritaha sva artha. What's artha mean? Dharma artha. The artha means, literally it means goal, or that which is desired. Sva artha, the real self-interest of the living being. Pungsam svartha para, the ultimate objective or interest of the living being, is achieved. How? Ekanta bhaktir. Govinde. Singular devotional service. It's the same message. So what we're hearing in Canto 2, Chapter 3, it's a theme verse, like in musical orchestration. I'm not so knowledgeable but a little bit that I know. In the masterpiece of music, there's a certain series of notes that are performed or played by different musical instruments, and that set of musical notes, it then brings out a mood or a message. It's supposed to do that. Just like raga, certain notes, according to certain times of the day, certain notes are appropriate. It enhances the mood of that particular time of the day, or a particular mood of joy, or rest, or different moods. That's the science of raga. In the science of literary composition, similarly, certain phrases are used to bring out a key message, and that those phrases are repeated, and they're repeated in slightly different variations, but they're repeated so that the message is very clear. So this is a very important message with its theme from the 7th canto, chapter 7, to render exclusive service to the lotus feet of Govinda and to see him everywhere is the only goal of life. Yet, sarvatra tad ikshanam. Tad ikshanam, to see the personality of Godhead. Through this process of hearing the holy name and rendering very focused, singular devotional service. And that's the Bhagavatam. Vyavasayatmi ka bhutir ekeha kuru nandana is the Bhagavad Gita's message. Vyavasayatmi ka bhuti. Same idea. When one's fixed in a very concentrated mood of devotion upon the personality of Godhead, intelligence fixed, and mind upon the Supreme Lord. That's the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is indicating the topmost stage is that, mind absorbed in me, intelligence always engaged in me. Surely one resides with me, dwells with me. In the stage of perfection. And if one can't do that, then one should engage in the regulations of bhakti yoga so that one will develop the desire to attain to me. So there's the practice of bhakti yoga and there's the fixed stage. So this is describing that fixed stage. And how does the fixed stage become accomplished? Bhagavata sangataha. Bhagavati achalo bhavo yad bhagavata sangataha. And there's a way to associate with the Bhagavata by hearing and by rendering service. So, Prabhupada's very nice purport, 3 pages long. He starts by speaking, he goes back to the, it's a contrast per paragraph. Previously, it's speaking about living entities having different desires, this desire, that desire, correspondingly this worship, that worship. Those desires are due to the influence of the modes of material nature upon the living being, conditioning the living being in a false way to think that's going to bring happiness. But it doesn't bring happiness, it brings a struggle for happiness, but never happiness. Never a state of contentment. The struggle for existence is something like following the will of the wisp under the spell of material enjoyment. Very beautifully stated message here. All plans for material enjoyment or by worship of different demigods, as described in the previous verses of this chapter, or by the modernized advancement of scientific knowledge without the help, the help of God or demigod, are illusory. only. For despite such plans for happiness, the conditioned living being within the compass of material creation can never solve the problems of life, namely birth, death, old age, and disease. The history of the universe is full of such plan makers, and many kings and emperors come and go, leaving a plan-making story only. So there are states of religiousness and irreligiousness. But even in the similarity between the two is there's plan making for happiness. It may be more theistic and more atheistic, but the target is the same. Material happiness. Chasing the will of the wisp, which is nothing but stages of phantasmagoria. He says this in the... these are but different phases of phantasmagoria. A transcendentalist can say those things, and it's not like a put-down. It's just complete detachment. Supposing someone has a dream and they come to you and say, wow, I had this really heavy dream, blah, 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 blah. You understand the meaning of that dream? Different stages of phantasmagoria. One doesn't place a great deal of value in, or meaning in a dream. Maybe there's some important message. Yeah, the important message is it's illusion. Because now you're awake and it doesn't have any hold upon you at all. But while you're dreaming, you're thinking, this is it. This is my happiness, this is my distress. And meanwhile, the primary problems of life go on. The clock is ticking, and we're getting older. And disease, old age, death, and then again rebirth, and one is trying to figure out what's the meaning of this phantasmagoria. Meaning is it's phantasmagoria, it's not a real identity. Don't invest consciousness in illusion and try to figure out what does the illusion mean, what the message of illusion is. Leave it. Take up reality. And that's what Prabhupada writes. Actually, human life is meant for making a solution to the problems of life. One can never solve such problems by satisfying different demigods, by different modes of worship, or by so-called scientific advancement in knowledge without the help of God and the demigods. He's repeating this, so it's important when you see Prabhupada repeating something. Worship of different demigods, worship other than different demigods, or just plain old scientific no-worship, just, you know, pursuing enjoyment through gross methodologies. None of them will be successful. They're all dependent upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why not just go to the Supreme Personality of Godhead? That's the indication. Sarvadharmam Puditya. So he describes the modern mechanistic scientist's approach to experience different things and go to different planets and enjoy in different ways. Another phase of phantasmagoria. Then there's the worshippers of the Vedas. Oh no, we don't need the scientific, we just need to worship. And but phases of phantasmagoria. And so the Bhagavatam wants us to redirect that life energy to unflinching, fixed in faith, devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And how is that made possible? Bhagavata Sangataha, by the association of Bhagavatas, very qualified persons. For lack of that association, persons don't have faith. To share some appreciation that comes from Prabhupada's genius. At the festival of inspiration where I just was, one devotee who was there was Dhanavir Maharaj. And Dhanavir Maharaj has had, as I have had, a fascination with the Vedic presentation of cosmology. Not that from the technical side as much as from the side that it's Vedic science, it's true science, as opposed to science that's speculative. It's true science. It very comprehensively explains things around us in this world without the aid of speculation, without the aid of imperfect senses, just from descending knowledge. So he was commissioned by Mayapur Development Committee to by Ambarish basically to spend 1 year and see what he could come up with as a model for the Vedic planetarium that will be built. So he did that, and he traveled throughout South India in particular and visited some Sri Vaishnava and Madhva scholars and sadhus, who particularly the Madhvas, over generations since Madhvacharya's time, have very carefully studied and preserved and presented this knowledge. And in the Sri Vaishnava line, a couple centuries ago, Tiruvenkateshwara Swami, something like that, his whole life was devoted to this subject, and wrote and made charts and had teachings, and those teachings have been passed on. Very, very, very deep. Now, those persons who are knowledgeable in that field we're describing, although the approach is obviously quite different than modern science, what it does, what modern science does, that is, in a comprehensive way, it describes the world around us. And it's verifiable. And, for that matter, more accurate. Without the assistance of technology to do it. Which is mind-boggling for Western science. How did they know these things? What to speak of so long ago? How did they know it all without the assistance of technology? One of them described when Kepler, I forget, with the Copernicus idea of the distance between the Earth and the Sun, something million miles, and Kepler was 13 billion miles, and now it's 93 million miles. So with the assistance of technology, they're able now to say 93 million miles. But long ago, the Vedic wisdom said 100 million miles. Of course, then there's its forget what the terms are, but when it's further away and then it's a little closer, it kind of moves a bit. but in that same range, very close, very accurate. And so many other kinds of measurements, you know, the measurement of the diameter of the earth. There's a presentation in Mahabharata where it describes what it looks like from the moon to look at the earth. And it gives a description in very simple language. So this Tir of Venkateshwara Swami, whatever his name is, meditated on those verses from Mahabharata and then for some period of time and then drew what he saw in his meditation. And, you know, describing two banyan leaves and a rabbit. Anyway, and you turn them upside down and it's Asia, the ears of the rabbit, going down for Africa, and then the head of the rabbit and the body of the rabbit and his tail, Southeast Asia, and North and South America being the two banyan leaves, and then another little banyan leaf over there is Australia and New Zealand. What it looks like from the moon looking at the earth. But with measurements, you know, the diameter of the earth. How do they have the ability to measure the diameter of the earth? Now, Christopher Columbus's time, they were still thinking the earth was flat. You sail far enough and you're going to fall off. How did they know the diameter of the earth and what the earth looks like from the moon? And so many other, you know, how far, just, you know, the distance between the, all those measurements, in the vertical dimension of the universe where the sun is, above where the earth is, and radially outward where the sun is, and in the distance between the earth and the pole star. I mean, those are all mathematical things. How do they know them accurately? It's descending knowledge. In a very, very systematic scientific, it's compelling. So for thoughtful people that like, you know, they like technical things, they can understand. This is not only far out, it's very, very scientific. You can calculate, they were able to calculate it with a geocentric model, you know, astronomical events, eclipses of the sun and the moon and the movements of planets, and to calculate them, not just observe them, calculate things you can't even see with a telescope, without a telescope. So, it relates to this verse. Knowledge that's derived from this descending source requires to understand it, to properly, even to take the time to hear it, but to speak of to understand it, and to live one's life by it and get the realizations that come from living one's life by it. The realizations of the personality of Godhead that come from devotional service. That's a treasure. That's such a gift that comes from Bhagavata Sangata. And without that Bhagavata Sangata, it's unavoidable. The default position is one's going to have a material conception of life. And with a material conception of life is looking for happiness in material things. And so science and knowledge has that to driving it, how to enjoy material things. And because that's the consciousness, one, all of their understandings are going to be clouded and colored, and two, the personality of God is going to be out of sight. The goal of life is going to be missed. And therefore, repeated birth and death in the material world. Just from that absence of Bhagavata Sangata. Because everyone's got some desires that's in this material world. How do you become desireless? And what does even that mean? The association of devotees. same people that don't have the association of saintly persons, they can read the same thing and not understand it, or misunderstand it, or not even be interested in understanding it. Just thinking how to use it for sense gratification. It's so abominable, so unfortunate. The gross materialist, without any faith in the Vedic version, remains eternally in darkness, driven by a false conviction on the basis of imperfect experimental knowledge, or so-called material science, which can never reach into the realm of transcendental knowledge. So, this is the third time in one purport where Prabhupada has really put the nail and hit it with a hammer. Thud, bang, bang. That modern science is way down from what was previously being discussed, the worship of various devas. Because those that don't go to the devas, they still have desires. They want to fulfill their desires without any respect for the controlling personalities in the universe, or to speak of God. So they're manipulating laws of nature, trying to squeeze out some idea of how to make a more sophisticated form of sense gratification. That atheistic mentality is very strong, and there's distinct consequences for an atheistic mentality or buying into it. And the atheists, sorry to say, they would like very much to control the minds of the young people, the little potential asuras of the world. It's a very strong competition. They have the upper hand presently, and they want to maintain it and make it more so. They don't like the idea of an intelligent presentation of theism. So that's one service that all of you need to consider somehow in the course of your life, to make some contribution in that department. So it's a question of in the pursuit of your academic work, what does that have to do with service to Krishna? There's an area that when you have that skill through the refinements of higher education and the gifts that have been endowed by Krishna, to take the proper direction given by spiritually qualified persons to direct you in ways and means of using that skill to bring spiritual understanding, bring light into this dark age of Kali. It's a responsibility. It's an opportunity. It's a service. But more, it's a responsibility. And with that proper direction, then the illusion, the glitter gold attraction of material facilities that can come to one who has some ability to manipulate matter, that the illusion is gone, is driven away by devotional service, like we were discussing this morning. Therefore, last paragraph, unless the gross materialists or the worshippers of the temporary demigods come in contact with a transcendentalist like the pure devotee of the Lord, their attempts are simply a waste of energy. Only by the grace of the divine personalities, the pure devotees of the Lord, can one achieve pure devotion, which is the highest perfection of human life. only a pure devotee of the Lord can show one the right way of progressive life. Now the concluding words. Otherwise, both the materialistic way of life, without any information of God or the demigods, and the life engaged in worship of the demigods, in pursuit of temporary material enjoyments, are different phases of phantasmagoria. So this is the fourth time. The same purport. He's equated what modern science is doing and what demigod worship is doing in the Vedic way and the non-Vedic way. They're quite similar. There's certain differences, but they're quite similar in their objective. And without the association of a pure devotee to take one beyond those limitations, one is pious and the other is impious, but they're both material enjoyment targets. This is all nicely explained in the Bhagavad Gita also, but the Bhagavad Gita can be understood in the association of the pure devotees only, and not by interpretations of politicians or dry speculators. In the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna indicates this, that those namam duskritina mudha, those who are duskritis, they're pious, there's some kriti, but it's being misused, so they're duskritis. They have these four categories, mudha, Mayaya Pratigyana, Naradhama, Asaram Bhavam Ashrita. They're all duskritis, because they don't surrender to the personality of Godhead. There are four types of people that do, four types of people that don't, and the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita both want to make sure that we do surrender to Krishna through the good association of Bhagavata, Bhagavata Sangataha. So here's the verse again. Etavan eva yajatam iha nikshaya sodayaha bhagavati achalo bhavo yad bhagavata sangataha. All the different kinds of worshippers of multi-demigods mentioned earlier in this chapter can attain the highest perfectional benediction, which is spontaneous attraction unflinchingly fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead only by the association of the pure devotee of the Lord. Great verse, huh? What's next? Stay tuned. Any comments or questions? The Brahmana who performs Vedic rituals may or may not know what the ultimate purpose of the Vedas is. But at least they're qualified in that field. Like Parashuram's father, Jamadagni, the one who comes to mind. He clearly knew how to do Vedic rituals, and he also understood the ultimate goal. Vyasa clearly understood the ultimate goal while he knew all about the performance of Vedic rituals. He didn't so much engage himself in the execution of rituals, but he knew. Others, Vishwamitra. Anything else? Okay, a satisfied group. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Ki Jai.